I'm Kevin Kelly. The show is Live and Local, your connection to local music and more. And we have a little music and a little theater on the program today. Little Women, of course, a rather famous novel, has been adapted for the stage by a couple of women in Champaign-Urbana, and it is being put on in Sydney at Creative Dramatics Workshop with a couple of families involved, and we have two of those families, actually a few families involved. We have two of those families represented on the program today. A number of the actors and the director, Jill Rannebarger, are with us in the first half of the show. They'll give a scene or two and talk about that adaptation. And then in the second part of the show, Carlisle Johnson, who is leader of the New Orleans Jazz Machine, who are going to be performing at the Urbana Free Library as part of their UF Live series Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And he's bringing with him pianist Bill French, who is also a member of the Sextet, which is that Dixieland group. So we'll hear from them and Little Women on Live and Local today. It's FM 90.9. And that was the main title, called Orchard House, from film called Little Women. I'm looking here at Thomas Newman, who actually wrote the music for it. Winona Ryder, one of the stars in that production, and directed by Gillian Armstrong. And heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. We're going to, during this part of the show, talk about a production of Little Women that is being given by Creative Dramatics Workshop in Sydney. It's an adaptation of the novel that was written by a couple of women in Champaign-Urbana specifically for these performances. And they've done a nice thing in the casting, in that they have cast a bunch of people who are related to each other, a couple of sisters, actually two sets of sisters at least, and then a whole other family. And actually, I think we have two whole families at least. Anyway, we'll get the details of all of that from director Jill Rannebarger and two representative groups of two of those families. Coming up later on the show, Carlisle Johnson and Bill French of the New Orleans Jazz Machine, who are going to be at Urbana Free Library on Sunday. So I think we have a nicely varied program for you, and hope you'll be looking forward to it, as I am. I'm Kevin Kelly. Jill Rannebarger, as I said, the director of this production, and also two of her daughters. Do you have more than two daughters?
No.
So
no.
All of her daughters are in the show, Emma and Molly Rannebarger. And then Susan Pollocky is one of the parental units of two other sisters who were in the show. And I believe that you have only those two daughters, right, Susan?
Yes.
Yep. And they are Sarah and Emily Pollocky. And if any of those names happen to sound familiar, it's because Sarah and Emily and Molly were actually on this program not all that long ago, talking about their very own adaptation. They did it themselves of, I am now blanking on the name of the book.
Give My Regrets to Broadway.
Yeah, and what was the name of the character?
Chet Gecko.
Chet Gecko. I was going to say he was a muskrat, but I knew that was wrong. Chet Muskrat doesn't sound right. So that was, I mean, you did a wonderful job, and so now you're just about radio veterans, or you will be by the end of today, virtually speaking. So, Jill, tell us a little bit about how these two women, Kim Lose and Paula Strong of Champaign-Urbana, how they came up with the idea, if in fact they came up with the idea, to do this adaptation of Little Women.
Well, they put this together in 2000, actually, for Creative Dramatic Workshop, and they had daughters involved in theater and put it together. They said basically their love of theater is why they come up with this.
But why Little Women?
I think, from my perspective and a lot of people, it's just the love of the book. It's a wonderful book that we remember when we were kids growing up.
Is there anybody here who did not read Little Women when you were kids?
No.
I mean, some of you still are kids. I did not read Little Women as a kid or still, I'm sorry to say. And isn't there also Little Men?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I didn't read that either. And Louisa May Alcott, is that her book?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. What makes it so special, people? I mean, obviously, it's people are still reading it, so there must be something that makes it special.
It's set in the 1860s, Civil War era, and I think the relationships of the family, they're so different, yet they pull together and support each other, and it's just a wonderful, heartwarming production.
And for girls, there are the four March sisters, Meg, Jo, Beth, and Amy. And all the sisters kind of have their own special characteristic that's all their own, yet I think all girls can kind of find a side of themselves that is like each of the sisters. And it's a great collection. It's mainly Jo's story, I would say. Jo's definitely the main character, one people remember, but you don't forget any of the sisters or any of their stories. And it's really well written and special.
And as the director and assigning the parts, it was very difficult for me. I wanted the four girls involved, but to decide who would take on which character, they've really owned the character. It's really come to life. It's really part of them. It's not really represents who they are, you know, here and now, but in the play, they really do an awesome job of taking on that character and being that character.
And speaking just a moment ago was Emily Pollocky. Which is your role, Emily?
I'm playing the oldest March sister, Meg.
And are you, in fact, the oldest of this quartet?
Mm, yes.
And so you are the four March sisters.
Yes.
We managed to get you all out of school, which must have been a crushing blow. Well, two of you are homeschooled, right?
All
four of you. Well, then that's no big deal. Probably still a crushing blow. Okay, so who is Jo then?
I am.
And you are Emma.
Emma, yes.
Rannenbarger. Mm-hmm. And that leaves Molly and Sarah as?
I'm Beth.
And I'm Amy.
So Molly is Beth and Sarah is Amy, and I'm not going to keep track of all of this. I should have written that down, I suppose. What makes it Jo's story?
Well, it follows her life. A lot of the activities revolve around her trying to, she's very much a tomboy, and she's trying to embrace the more girly side because society, they won't accept her as a tomboy. She needs to be more ladylike in order to be accepted, and it's following her friendship and her love for different characters and how she sort of develops as a woman as she gets older.
What makes her tomboy-ish, particularly back in that time?
Well, she doesn't really like all the stuff that she's supposed to be doing. She's supposed to be sitting at the fire doing needlework, you know. She's supposed to be very quiet and prim, and she's very loud and out there. She's not one who's going to sit by quietly and watch things happen. She wants to get out and do stuff, things like that.
What does she want to get out and do?
She wants to become a writer. She wants to become a very famous writer, and that was frowned upon in society because women weren't supposed to be writers. They were supposed to stay home and take care of their kids.
And yet here this is written by a woman.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which is somewhat ironic, isn't it? And are you a tomboy?
Not so much. Not really. I really enjoy playing Jo, but I'm not really a tomboy.
Do you think you enjoy playing Jo for that reason, that it's maybe out of character a little bit?
Yeah, she's something definitely different. Like the last role I took on was Juliet in Romeo and Juliet, and she's very much a girly character. She doesn't get out and do stuff like Jo does. So it was a radical difference, and it's not really me. So it was interesting to try and figure out how I could portray Jo. So I was still being true to myself, but embracing the Jo character.
Well, and yet Juliet rebels against her family in a
she
rather
does.
Large way. So, mm-hmm. Maybe you're embracing your inner rebel after all, somehow or another. Molly, would you agree with everything that that your sister Emma just said about herself?
Yes, she's definitely not a tomboy.
And are you?
A little bit, I think, yeah. More so than Emma, at any rate.
And what's your character like?
Well, Beth is the sweet, shy one, which is totally not like me at all. She's the one who just, you know, sits back, and she's always happy-go-lucky and optimistic, and everything is going to turn out all right. That's really not me either. It's definitely interesting to play someone who is so innocent and sweet. It's not like me at all.
See, this is the problem about having parents in the room when kids are talking about themselves. I mean, Jill is sitting over there nodding and shaking her head, and I'm, you know, I'd like to put her in another room. And, you know, because, what would you say anything different if you were uninfluenced by your mother sitting here?
Not really.
So you have a reasonable relationship.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Well, yeah.
Reasonable. Yes. I didn't say perfect.
Yes, reasonable.
Sarah, would you say your character is your type?
No. No.
So let's hear it. What is your character like?
Well, Amy's the youngest sister, and she's sort of spoiled by all of her other sisters. She's sort of like Joe, actually. She wants to be out there doing things, and Joe sort of gets all the attention, which Amy does not appreciate. And she lets Joe know that in very volatile, inflammable ways. So.
And you are not, you would not do things like that?
I'd think about doing them maybe, but I wouldn't actually do them.
And Emily, that leaves you. What's your character like, and does that match with you?
I think out of all of us, I'm probably the closest to being actually like my character. I am the oldest. Usually in groups, I am the oldest. Mm-hmm. Meg's kind of motherly. The side of Meg that isn't as much like me is Meg's very worried about her appearance and who she is and conforming with what people want her to be or what other girls her age are, and that's not really me, which is interesting. There's a scene where Meg is just decides to try to be somebody she's not, and it doesn't work out well, and she learns a lot, but that's interesting to play just because I wouldn't do something like that.
So your character wants to be somebody but figures out that she might as well be who she is.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Joe wants to be who she is, and nobody wants her to do that. Mm-hmm. But is it fair to guess, again, since I haven't read the book, that you get what you want in the end?
Yes, she does become published, and she finds a man who accepts her for what she is, and they get married, and it's very happy.
Is Joe based at all on the author?
Mm-hmm. I don't really know. I don't know that much about Louisa May Alcott.
Jill is nodding.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yes.
A lot of people say that Louisa May Alcott wrote the character Joe based on herself.
Having known, of course, at that point that she was realizing a big part of her dream.
Mm-hmm.
And that leaves Susan. Mm-hmm. What is your role in this?
I play the mother of the March Girls.
Logically enough.
Yes. It's a role I have practice with now. And one thing I wanted to say about the play, I think part of the reason it is still so popular is the emotions that the family feels are emotions we feel today. Though the book is written in the 1860s, it's still very current. So it was interesting playing the mother to these four girls, all of whom I know very well, and seeing how that emotion flows back and forth. It was very fun.
Well, obviously, you are the mother of two of the girls, but if I remember right from my conversation previously with three of these young ladies, the other two are probably at your house often enough.
Yes.
That they might as well be your daughters.
There's a great degree of comfort.
Or at least you like a second mother of sorts.
Yeah, a lot of comfort in scenes where we embrace or touch each other or scold each other or talk seriously. It's very easy to do because we know each other well.
So, Sarah or Emily, if you are in the play being scolded by your mom in the play, does that ring true? I mean, do you have sort of the same emotions that you normally would have? Mainly. Or does your mother, in fact, never scold you at all?
Never.
I'm just so perfect. But I wouldn't do a lot of the things that Amy does in the play. Like, she burns up all of Jo's stories at one point because she gets really mad with her. And I wouldn't do that, but when Mom scolds me, it is pretty much like when she scolds me at home.
So, I wonder if this is a good role for you, because you said she does the things you would only think about doing.
Mm-hmm.
And here you actually get to do them. And get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if this will affect your behavior at home after the play is over. What do you think?
Hopefully not.
Right. Well, I think you brought at least a scene from mm-hmm. this adaptation of Little Women. And again, the adaptation was made by Kim Loess and Paula Strong, I can't read my own handwriting here, for this production by Creative Dramatics Workshop, which has its own small theater in Sydney. And I guess I haven't said, and I should say, that they actually opened the show last weekend, but there are still three opportunities for audiences to see it, Friday and Saturday at 7:30, and then there's a Sunday matinee at 2:30. Who wants to set up what we're going to hear?
Well, it's the beginning of the play, and the four March girls are sitting at home. They're just talking, so it's basically the introduction to the whole play.
So these are the first lines that
yes.
one sees.
Yes.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
good.
Yes.
This is Live and Local on FM 90.9.
Christmas won't be Christmas without any presents.
It's so dreadful to be poor.
I don't think it's fair for some girls to have plenty of pretty things and other girls nothing at all.
But we have father and mother and each other.
No, we don't have father, and we won't have him for a long time.
I miss him. But I'm so proud that he went to the army as a chaplain, even though he was too old to be drafted. You know the reason mother proposed to not have any presents this Christmas was because it's going to be a hard Christmas for everyone. We shouldn't spend money on pleasure when our men are suffering so in the army.
Well, I don't think the little we could spend would do the army any good anyway. We each have a dollar, and I would like to buy a new book in the worst way.
I'd like to spend my dollar on some new sheet music for my piano.
And I want a box of new drawing pencils.
Mother didn't really mention our money, and she wouldn't want us to give everything away. Let's each buy what we want. I'm sure we each work hard enough to deserve it.
I know I do, teaching those tiresome king children nearly all day.
Well, you don't have half the hard time I have. How would you like to be shut up with that nervous, fussy old Aunt March, who keeps you jumping, is never satisfied, and nags you till you're ready to fly out the window or cry?
It's not right to complain, but I do think that washing the dishes and keeping things tidy is the worst work in the world. It makes me cranky, and my hands get so stiff that I can't practice the piano well at all.
Well, none of you suffer as much as I do. You don't have to go to school with girls to tease you if you don't know your lessons, laugh at your dresses, make fun of your father if he isn't rich, and insult you when your nose isn't nice. It's so degrading.
Don't you wish we had the money that Papa lost when we were little, Joe? How happy and good we'd be if we had no worries. But Meg, you just said the other day that we're a lot happier than the king children, who fight and complain all the time in spite of their money. Yes, I did, Beth. And I think we are happy. For even though we have to work hard, we do have a lot of fun together.
I'll say we do.
Oh, don't, Joe. That's so boyish.
So? I don't think it's fair that only boys get to whistle. Besides, I like whistling.
I detest rude, unladylike girls.
Really, Joe, you are old enough to stop acting like a boy and behave better. It didn't really matter so much when you were a little girl, but now you should try and remember that you are a young lady.
I'm not. I hate to think that I've got to grow up and be Miss March and look so snooty. It's bad enough to be a girl when I like boys' games and work. It's worse now than ever. I'm dying to go and fight in the war, but I can only stay home with that pokey old lady.
Poor Joe. It's too bad, but no one can help that you aren't a boy.
As for you, Amy, you're much too prim and proper. It's funny now, but you'll grow up to be an old goose if you aren't careful. Your manners are nice, but your phony ways are as annoying as Joe's boyishness.
If Joe is a tomboy and Amy is a goose, what am I?
You are a sweetheart and nothing else.
Where are my girls?
Marmy's home.
You're home.
I'm sorry to be so late, but there was so much to do at the station this afternoon, getting boxes ready to send to the soldiers. Beth, did anyone call?
No.
Meg, how's your cold?
Better.
Oh, Joe, dear, you look tired.
Yes.
But I have a surprise for you.
A letter?
A letter from Father?
When will he come home, Marmy?
Oh, not for many months, unless he's hurt or becomes ill. He'll stay and do his duty as long as he can. But here, listen to what he says to you. My dear, give my girls all my love and a kiss. Tell them I think of them day by day, pray for them night by night, and find my best comfort in thoughts of them at all times. A year seems too long to wait before I see them again, but I know that they'll be loving children to you, will do their duties faithfully, and conduct themselves so well that when I come back to them, I'll be prouder than ever of my little women.
I truly am a selfish girl, but I will try to be better so that Father won't be disappointed in me when he returns.
We all will, Amy. I won't complain about too much work or worry about my looks. Too much, if I can help it.
And I'll try to be the little woman he likes to call me, and try not to be too rough or wild, and try to keep my temper. And I will try to be content with being here, instead of always wanting to be somewhere else. I can only imagine I will have as hard a task doing this as a rebel has down south.
I can only hope to be all that Father wishes for me when he returns.
Oh, girls, I'm sure you'll all make Father proud of you. Remember when you were little, how we used to play Pilgrim's Progress, and each floor was a different adventure, and on your backs you carried bundles for burdens? Suppose we begin again, not in play this time, but in earnest, and see how far we can each get before Father gets home.
Really, Mother, what are our bundles?
Well, you've each told me just now, all except Beth, and I rather think she hasn't got one.
Yes, I have. Mine is dishes and dusters and envying girls with nice pianos and being afraid of people. Oh, let's do it. It's only another name for trying to be good, and the story may help us.
We were all so depressed tonight, and Marmy came and pulled us out, as Help did in the book Pilgrim's Progress. We each ought to have our roll of directions, like Christian in the book. What shall we do about that?
You look under your pillows Christmas morning. You'll find your guidebooks.
And we get to find out eventually what those things are if you have not read the book. Those were five of the numerous actors in Creative Dramatics Workshop's production of Little Women, Louisa May Alcott novel, adapted by Kim Lose and Paula Strong. And it's going to be performed in Sydney. The remaining performance is this weekend, Friday and Saturday, 7:30, and Sunday at 2:30. And the roles were taken here by the role of Joe by Emma Rannebarger, Meg by Emily Pollocky, Beth by Molly Rannebarger, and Amy by Sarah Pollocky. And as you can judge from the names, two sisters, and their mother, played by Susan Pollocky, and you might well guess, yes, the mother of two of the sisters. And the director is the mother of the other two sisters, Jill Rannebarger. There is a bit of nepotism going on in this production, it seems like. And then there's, you mentioned the King family in the line so far, and there is a King family in this thing. Are they playing members of the King family as it happens?
No.
That's just purely coincidence. Mm-hmm. Jill, when you were casting this, did you have any, do you sort of send out the word to certain families that, this would be good to have, or did you just put out the call for auditions and these folks happened to show up?
Basically called, just put out the information for auditions. We had 10 newcomers to this production, but the reason I did this, well, the love of the book, but also my daughters are teenage girls, their friends are teenagers, and they've performed numerous plays together. I thought this was a wonderful time to do this particular play.
So at some level, it just happened that the right family showed up to fit in.
Yes.
Tell me about the Kings. There's a bunch of them in this show.
The whole family. There's seven in the family, and they all have parts in the play. Four of them have never performed at CDW before, so they're new. The two littlest girls, they're either four or five. They play part of the Hummel family, and they just steal the show. They're just so cute.
Yeah, cuteness always often trumps talent.
Yes.
Which has to be frustrating, like when what do they say? Never share the stage with kids and dogs or something like that, because the dog will trump everybody else. You mentioned that some of them haven't been on the the stage for Creative Dramatics Workshop before. Are most of the productions for that company for younger people? Or at least involving younger people?
Most, yes. And it's usually the same people. You know, there's a lot of people that are in this. We have 31 members in this cast. So it's huge. It's people from Savoy, Philo, Homer, Sydney, St. Joe, Champaign, and Urbana. I usually take a bus, my van load of kids every night to rehearsal. It's usually full of people from Champaign, Urbana. Back and forth.
So you just sort of stop along the way.
Yes.
And pick up. So they stand out on the street corner and you know, this is their bus stop.
Yes. I ask for a token.
And do you get it?
No. They show up for practice. That's my token.
Well, I know, again, from previous conversation with Molly, Sarah, and Emily, that you all have done some acting before, obviously in the production we talked about previously. Emma, is theater new to you at all?
Or no, I've been in theater for a long time.
And how about Mom?
I acted years ago, but I haven't probably 15 or 20 years. So it was very fun to get back and try it again.
Was it difficult?
No, not really. It really wasn't hard to get the lines down or to get out there and see what we could all do together.
And how much did you feel that you were, again, as a mother, particularly the mother of two of these, just playing yourself? And how much do you really feel that you're trying to play a different mother or just a different woman?
That's a good question. I think to some extent, I certainly am playing myself, because the way I approach mothering, I think, is very much the way the mother in the book does. Fair but firm, I guess. She's living at a different time. She has different concerns. I don't have a husband away at the war. I don't have to carry all my water, make all my clothing, figure out where the food will come from. So there are aspects that are very different, but I think the emotional basis is very much the same.
It just occurred to me one aspect that may be similar, although they did refer to going to school. Mm-hmm. I was going to guess that the mom back then would have taught the kids a lot, and you're homeschooling your kids.
Yeah, one of the daughters is home all the time. In the course of the play, another daughter comes home. Mm-hmm. But because it is wartime, mother is out working, so Joe ends up with the responsibility for teaching the younger children.
Now, why does she end up with that responsibility since she's not the eldest?
Because Meg is out teaching those tiresome King children.
Oh, she's
I'm teaching somebody else's children.
She's been farmed out.
My own sister. So.
Well, it sounds like I would imagine there's be all kinds of complex and interesting interactions that go on between you, given your real lives and the stage lives. And I would think it would be fascinating for viewers to. Do you call people go see plays viewers, or is that just people at a movie?
Audience,
there you go. And apparently need another cup of coffee. I would think it'd be fascinating for audience members to see these interactions, particularly, seeing the Pollockys and the Ranibargers and the Kings. And are there other families in here as well, or is that pretty much covered? The Lundquists. Yep,
Emily,
there's a few of those on there, yep.
Emily and Sarah's dad is a part of it. He was here for
Chris Pollocky, that's
too.
Right.
Ramseers, there's a couple girls, two girls. Overbees, there's three in that. So it is Knox's. There's three. All three siblings are in it. So a lot of families.
That's terrific. It's a Creative Dramatics Workshop's production of Little Women, as adapted by Kim Lose and Paula Strong of our community. And being performed in Sydney. Three performances left, Friday and Saturday at 7:30, Sunday afternoon at 2:30. And thanks to director Jill Ranibarger, daughters Emma and Molly, and mother Susan Pollocky, playing the mother in the show, and daughters Sarah and Emily Pollocky. All of them here with us on Live and Local. And thank you all for coming in. Did a nice job.
Thank
Thank you.
Coming up in just a few minutes, Carlisle Johnson, who is a leader of the New Orleans Jazz Machine, and also pianist Bill French, going to be talking a bit about their group, about Dixieland, and playing some recordings in advance of the Jazz Machine's performance at the Urbana Free Library on Sunday. This is Live and Local on FM 90.9. Preservation Hall Jazz Band playing Put On Your Old Gray Bonnet with vocals in there, Percy Humphrey. And that was recorded live at Preservation Hall in New Orleans. And I don't know how many of you have ever actually been there. I was there one time many years ago and was probably had the same surprise that I imagine most people have when you go there. That place is tiny. I just never imagined that it would be such a hole in the wall. I mean, it really isn't much more than that, and which made a wonderful experience to be right on top of those folks. And so Preservation Hall Jazz Band Live is the name of that recording, and they are our introduction to a conversation here on Live and Local with two members of New Orleans Jazz Machine based in Champaign-Urbana who are going to be performing on Sunday in Urbana. Before we actually do that, let me give a brief rundown of some other events going on in our area over the next couple of days. At the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, they continue, and in fact, I believe, finish up their performances this weekend of Nuncrackers, the Nonsense Christmas Musical, performances tonight and tomorrow at 8 o'clock. There's also a matinee at 2 o'clock on Friday, and then on Saturday at 2 and 8 o'clock as well. The Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana continues its performances of the play Love Song, performances tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday at 8 o'clock. Parkland College Theater and Bah Humbug Productions continue their performances of their own adaptation of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, performances at Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7 o'clock, and there's a matinee on Saturday as well at 2 o'clock. And for that matter, a week from yesterday, we will be broadcasting a radio adaptation of the Parkland College and Bah Humbug production of A Christmas Carol, recorded live in our studio here. It's going to be a two-hour special next Wednesday, the 23rd, right here on Live and Local. And jazz players Donnie Heitler and Kevin Hart are going to be performing tonight at the Iron Post in Urbana. That is at 7:30. On Friday and Saturday, the Illinois Symphony giving its pops concerts, holiday pops concerts. They're calling it Home for the Holidays. Friday night at the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts. That's Friday night at 8. And then on Saturday at 8 at Sangamon Auditorium in Springfield. And on Friday, Keith Harden is giving one of several performances in our area at Bentley's Pub in downtown Champaign. That's Friday night at 8:30. And then on Saturday, he's at Huber's at 8 o'clock in the evening. And then he's got some other performances later on as well. And then finally, tomorrow at 6:30 at Heartland Gallery in downtown Urbana, guitarist Michael Kameen performing for an hour and a half at that space in Urbana. But for the purposes of this next conversation on Live and Local, the New Orleans Jazz Machine is going to be at the Urbana Free Library in Urbana, logically enough, at 2 o'clock on Sunday. They're going to play for about an hour and a half. Carl Johnson is their leader. He is on clarinet and sax. And Bill French, their pianist, both of them veterans of the local music scene for a very long time. I have no idea how long, so I guess might as well ask them. First of all, Carl and Bill, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for having us.
Glad to be here.
Glad to be here.
Bill, how long have you been around Champaign?
Ooh, you asked that as if... I got here in 72 on my birthday. I happen to remember that. So 72, that was in the 20th century.
Yeah, it was. You're right about that.
Yeah, 1972. And so I don't know how long that is. Quite a while, I guess. I was only 3 years old, but no, I'm just kidding.
And he's still wearing diapers, too,
yeah.
If you believe that one. But, and you've been, you're a pianist and drummer. Did you, mainly pianist first, or have you always been
first,
playing the drums?
Yeah, piano first, although actually I started on the bass drum in fifth grade.
Just the bass drum?
The bass drum, I was playing trumpet, and they needed a bass drummer, and I thought I was demoted, and I felt really bad. And then somebody told me that Sousa and, John Philip, we're talking about here, John Philip Sousa paid his bass drummer more than anybody else in his band. So that kind of, I felt better after that.
Now, did you ever figure out if they were just pulling the wool
to get you to play bass drummer?
Is that true?
I could tell, because we had a guy in Sousa's band in my hometown. He was a trombone player in his original band. So I felt, and my music teacher knew him, so I felt there was some credibility there.
Yeah, and you haven't had that myth dispelled since?
No.
All right. I'm going to have to look it up now.
And I have played bass drum with the band that Carl.
Mark Fouts.
Yeah, with Mark Fouts. I played bass drum with him a few years ago on the 4th of July.
And
so
you
I've kept that up.
Well, that's good, and you could tell him you're a veteran.
Absolutely.
And did you then demand a higher salary?
I did, and it's still in litigation as we speak.
Right. Carl, how long have you been around our community?
Oh, I went to school here.
Did you really?
And then I left for about 10 years while Krannert was being built. Then I came back and I said, wow, what happened to my favorite restaurants and the gas station on the corner where Krannert's standing now? And that was about 1970 or 71, and I don't think I'll leave. So.
Well, you might as well stick around by now.
Hey, it's home.
Although
you've
enjoyed it. Well, that's good.
Otherwise,
why stick around where it's so cold?
I'm thinking about that more and more these days. I keep telling my wife I want to go to a place with a nice, sunny, warm beach.
Yeah, and what does Judy have to say about
that? Well, she says, let me know. And I guess by playing gigs and things like that, I don't take off as much as maybe I should or could. But I still enjoy what I'm doing.
Well, you enjoy the playing. You both play a lot. You play in all different kinds of groups, whether they're standing groups or pickup groups. Bill, for example, I don't know where all you're playing now, but I know you play drums with Little Oi.
That's
Klezmer
right.
Band,
yeah.
Little Oi on the Prairie. Klezmer band. Who else are you playing with currently?
Well,
or frequently?
I play with some bands out of town, and I play as much as I can.
Both piano and drums.
Right.
And
but he's a great piano player.
Oh, I know.
I
know.
I always want to hear him on piano, and we managed to get his part.
I used to play
drums
in the New Orleans Jazz Machine, actually.
And you got
earlier versions of it. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. If you got promoted years ago to bass drum from trumpet, then do you feel you've been demoted back to piano from the drums?
Not at all. No. They're all the same thing to me.
It's all music.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. That's what I feel about it, too. And I really just enjoy his piano playing. We have drummers that do a pretty adequate job most of the time, so...
Well, Dave Madden, who is your drummer current drummer, is more than adequate.
He's terrific.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, before I ask you some things about how you put this group together, why don't we hear the group? When was this recording made?
Well,
you know?
On the CD it says April, or is it March? This particular one is June the 23rd. 2006 at the Cowboy Monkey.
Cowboy Monkey downtown Champaign.
Well, it used to be there.
The old monkey.
Oh, which is now
Maybe they renamed it.
Well, it's confusing all these downtown Champaign venues. But the tune, "You're Nobody's Sweetheart," is that the right track we've got going here? Let's see if we've got
it
queued up. Yeah, the New Orleans Jazz Machine here on Live and Local.
Thank you.
Collins Jazz Machine from a live performance at the Cowboy Monkey in downtown Champaign from June 23rd of 2006. And you're hearing them on the 17th of December, 2009, and you can hear them again on the 20th of December, this coming Sunday. You can hear them live, in fact, at the Urbana Free Library, part of the UF Live exclamation point series at the library. They are starting at 2 o'clock on Sunday, and we've got two of their members with us right now, Carl Johnson, who plays clarinet and sax, and pianist Bill French. The other members who are going to be there on Sunday, trumpeter Russ Pence, trombonist Barry Wagner, bassist Josh Walden, and drummer Dave Madden. And was Dave on that performance?
Dave was playing that.
Yes.
Was playing that.
And along with his brother. Tim. Mm-hmm.
Oh, brother Tim on the trombone.
Right.
Carl, you were just saying to me as we were listening to the end of that a little bit about how you came up with your name, New Orleans Jazz Machine.
I think we were playing at Huber's in the 90s when the manager says, what do you guys want to be called? I just want to play. He just said, well, how about the New Orleans Jazz Machine? And I kind of thought, oh,
and that was
all
it?
Right. And because we play a little bit different, we don't always stick to the traditional jazz styles. We might mix a little swing, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And the guys are good at going with that. We like it. So we stuck with the name, too.
What kind of, are you able to say easily enough, what distinguishes Dixieland from other jazz? And I know there's tons of other jazz. Maybe just let's say what distinguishes Dixieland. What makes Dixieland Dixieland?
Well, one distinction is there is Dixieland, and then some people like to call traditional trad. The British call it trad music for traditional. And there is a distinction between Dixieland and traditional, too. Some people will say that Dixieland is more of a commercialized music, and that trad is a purer style.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to explain
and,
it.
You know, we're not purists, although some of us are maybe individually at some point, but this particular band, I think, is more flexible in the sense that we can sometimes get pretty far out. We can go, you know, if avant-garde is a usable term, sometimes this band can get out there, and it's a lot of fun. In other words, we're not in a particular mold that we have to stay in, and that allows a lot of freedom. That's what I enjoy about it.
One of the passages just shortly before the end of that tune, you pointed out, Bill, as we were listening, that the rhythm section dropped out, the drums dropped out, the bass disappeared, and it was just the horns playing simultaneous improvisation with each other at the same time.
Right.
That itself seems to me to be a Dixieland thing, where sometimes it seems like barely controlled chaos.
Yeah,
probably.
You know, where they're each doing their own thing, and yet somehow it all comes together, and that's what sounds like Dixieland.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And in the early stages, in the early years, in the 20s and 30s, they used to do a lot of, and we do this sometimes, ensemble playing, where you have two of the horns playing behind a solo so that they're riffing behind a solo. And that's a lot of fun. And we do that. And
I kind of find that maybe some of the modern guys don't like to do that when a soloist gets up and plays. That's his time, his thing. We like to kind of mix it up.
We might have solo with rhythm section,
with the background,
but not with another horn,
right?
Competing,
or maybe we could compete by playing
anything
a
goes
riff
really
in the background.
Well, that's what makes it one of the things that makes it sound like so much fun is that you're all just wailing away and
there's a lot of energy.
Yeah.
That's the part
no
I like.
You feed off of each other,
yeah.
And I that's what I like about this particular band. The members that we have, I feel a lot of freedom. I feel a sense of, I trust everybody. I think everybody trusts everyone else. And when you have that kind of thing, You're just, you know, you get a smile on your face.
Of course, we don't know what we're going to do when Bill gets up and dances.
Well,
you know, in the middle of a solo.
That's a visual aspect.
You can just shout him down at that point, yeah. Well, I'm looking at the clock, and I cannot believe we've already run out of time on this program. We're going to have you guys come back and bring the band.
We'll bring the whole band.
Thank you. Something live.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun.
So we'll go out with a little snippet of the tune. What's the one we queued up here?
Second line.
New Orleans Jazz.
There's another
Jazz
drummer
machine.
There. I've got to know him
reasonably well.
Yeah.
Since his birth, I believe.
Probably. He'll start it out. And it's a typical second line start.
Carlisle Johnson with us and Bill French on Live and Local.